This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
9:03 on this Saturday morning, time now for Sports Saturday, brought to you by Prairie Farms Dairy in Carlinville. Taste the homemade goodness of Prairie Farms. By Mark Steeren, your State Farm Insurance agent in Litchfield. By Kurtz 24-hour heavy and light duty towing in Litchfield. DC Waste and Recycling in Hillsboro. By Bruce Webb Insurance in Farmersville and Raymond. Nancy's Pizza in Litchfield. The Huff and Sons Funeral Home in Hillsboro. By CTI Tech. Hillsboro Area Hospital, your front door to a world of healthcare. And by Garrell's Auto Body and Repair in Litchfield. And on this Saturday morning, we join WSMI's Tim Mize and Terry Tote.
David Jenkins, thank you very much, and welcome to Sports Saturday, a wet Saturday across Middle Illinois. We could hear it coming down on the roof just moments
springtime.
Ago.
Springtime. That means it's going to get warmer, right?
Allegedly.
Yeah.
We still got a couple more weeks of winter.
Yeah, that's, technically speaking, yes.
See, I don't remember
actually, next week we're supposed to have a couple of 60-degree days, too.
I never pay attention to the groundhog. But what did the groundhog tell us a few weeks back? Early, the groundhog said early.
No. No, you're incorrect. The groundhog says it's either 6 weeks away or, you know, it's the same thing. Spring starts about the 20th of March.
Well, yeah, that's what the calendar says, but by...
When you have to depend upon a rodent...
Did he see a shadow?
Remember.
Did he see a shadow or not see a shadow?
I don't think he saw a shadow. No.
Maybe David can find out what... Was it Punxsutawney Phil?
Punxsutawney Phil.
What is it for an early spring?
If he sees a shadow, it's going to be late spring. If he doesn't see a shadow, it's going to be an early spring.
Then he did not see a shadow.
So he was right or wrong?
It was kind of wrong because I don't know.
I don't. I'm already confused. All I know is that I've been told when Easter is late, like it is this year, so it's the 21st of April, spring is late. And right now, spring is looking like it's delayed.
4 months ago, the National Weather Service put out a prediction concerning long-range weather forecast based on the La Nina, El Nino, and they've been right on. So.
Well, see, I remember earlier in the fall, it could be a mild winter. I don't know about that. Slight miscalculation. Where's Dave Murray when you need him?
Nah.
Dave, come back to us. He'll tell us what it's all about.
But the spring prediction thus far has been right on.
Yeah. It's just nasty.
Yeah, and you know, it differs from year to year.
Supposed to have baseball and softball starting on Monday. That's not going to happen. No. Lincoln would has already rescheduled their baseball and softball games that were set for Monday.
Tim, this is where I bring up once again the need for the WSMI Dome. You know, we maybe need to get a some sort of a 501c thing going to where we get the WSMI Dome built right across from the radio station where we could play baseball and softball year round, which would be, you know, we could hold basketball tournaments in there.
Put
we could
a track in there.
Put a track in it. Yeah. Do football. I mean, we could do everything.
Fully operational.
Fully operational dome with a retractable dome.
Well, yeah, it's got to be retractable.
You know.
This day and age.
It's just, I mean, we would have the perfect spot.
We would.
And we could even bid for the state tournament.
Which will be up in after next year.
Yeah,
who knows? Maybe it'll go back to Champaign. Maybe it'll stay in Peoria. But last night in Peoria, there were some interesting ball games played. And 1A, Cisna Park beat Central A&M. That was 5-3 in the final state rankings. Of course, Central A&M beat Nokomis in the sectional final. Raiders got down early in the first quarter, couldn't make the comeback, so Cisna Park beat them 56-44. And then in the second semifinal, top-ranked Chicago Providence St. Mel was trailing Concord Triopia at the half. Triopia hit a running three at the buzzer to take a one-point lead, and they should have stopped there because then they got outscored 42-16 in the second half.
Well, and it's all about making adjustments at halftime. And, you know, great coaches make a little bit of adjustments at halftime, and that's exactly what happened with Providence St. Mel.
You know what makes coaches look really smart? Three first-team All-Staters.
Well, yeah, there you go. That also helps.
Useful.
Yes, very useful.
They scored 40 of St. Mel's 66 points. That's IBCA first-team All-Staters. Three of them on one team. So
St. Mel makes the coach look real smart.
It does. Yeah. St. Mel will play Cisna Park in the 1A title game a little after 1 o'clock today. Central A&M and Triopia for third place. They will tip things off at 11 o'clock. And then the 2A semifinals last night, Terry. wildly entertaining both games for totally different reasons.
Yeah.
The first semifinal was Public League versus Public League. Chicago Orr set a or tied a 2A state tournament game record with 83 points as they beat Chicago Corliss by 33, 83-50. It was a six-point game at the half. Then Orr outscored them 50-23 in the second half. But this game was up and down the floor. The Public League at its finest, and we'll get into the Public League at its worst here a little bit later in the show for the debacle that happened at North Lawndale last night. But then in the second semifinal, exact opposite type of game, where it was like a glacier going up and down the floor with Nashville and Gibson City.
This was the game that was, you know, you could accurately predict how it was going to go as far as the pacing. And it was.
And Nashville won 47-45. They tried to cough it up at the foul line. They made just 17 of 31 foul shots. Had some turnovers against full court pressure late as Gibson City, Melvin Sibley almost came all the way back. But Nashville was able to hold on for the win. That snaps a 31-game winning streak for Gibson City, Melvin Sibley. Nashville has now won 20 straight. But it sets up tonight for the 2A championship a classic Illinois state championship game. Chicago Public League versus Southern Power, up and down the floor versus controlling the pace, half-court sets with defense. Nashville's been number one in the state for most of the year. Chicago Orr has been ranked second for a good portion of the season, or the defending 2A champs. That game around probably 7:30 tonight by the time they get it tipped off. But this, Terry, this type of matchup, this is what makes the Illinois State Tournament so special.
And this is what other states can't offer. Because Illinois is long and drawn out from north to south, and other states are not. And this is a great matchup, and this, you know, the gymnasium ought to be packed, and it will be. I mean, there'll be a big contingent, at least from the Nashville side.
Yeah, packed? No.
Nashville side will be packed.
Yeah, Nashville side will be packed.
Nashville side will be packed. The Chicago teams, the Public League teams bring maybe 50 people, and that's about it.
And we're going to get into that a little bit later in the show as well. You know, attendances, you know, you hear some people crowing about problems with Peoria, blaming Peoria for the lack of Chicago Public League.
I'm telling you right now, when the tournament moved from Champaign to Peoria, there was some trepidation. But Peoria, to me, has been nothing but absolutely stellar as hosts.
Yeah.
They've had the March Madness experience, which is something that kids and even grown-ups absolutely love. It doesn't cost you a dime. It's right there at the arena. You don't have to walk outside. You just walk from one side of the arena to the other. And, you know, it's going to be tough for any entity to outbid Peoria for the state basketball tournament in the future because it's all right there.
Unless you have an experience option,
it's
going to be hard for them to get it away from Peoria.
It is. It is, because, you know, and even though the March Madness experience has been going on for several years, it's still wildly popular.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So.
And I remember going to Peoria back in the day when, you know, the first few years I was there. You couldn't get a ticket. Yeah. I remember sitting in the top row of the stadium in folding chairs.
Yeah.
Not even real seats that they had set up because it was jam-packed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what was back then? I remember Westinghouse was there. They had half a little section. Filled up. That's the problem is the Chicago Public League and the Chicago schools in general bring no one. We saw it this year at the 2A
Girls State Tournament.
Hillsboro showed up. T-Town showed up. St. Joe Ogden showed up. Chicago Marshall, about 50 people.
50 people. That's what they were talking about, just 50 people.
That's just the reality of the situation. You can put it in Champaign. You can put it in Chicago.
It's not going to change.
The
thing of it is, it's the attitude about how people think about their school. And when you have rural communities, smaller schools, people care. And when you're in a city situation, you know, there's just not that local tie-in.
You've got more important things to worry about.
Well, quite frankly, you do have a lot of other things to worry about. And I don't care if you move the 3A and 4A state tournaments, boys or girls, to the Chicagoland area, they're not going to draw significantly more people because people don't care.
No. You know, I shouldn't say more important, but just if you're living in the inner
different
city,
priorities.
If you're living in the inner city of Chicago and your kid does not play sports, you are most likely not going to be invested in the school's basketball team.
True.
That's just reality.
True.
That's not across the board true, but as a general rule, that is the case.
That's right.
And it's no one's fault. It's just the reality of the situation.
You know, and take this a step further, and maybe we don't want to get into this too much right now. But, of course, there's, again, somebody, one of the state legislators, state reps, have brought out the fact that, you know, the Illinois High School Association ought to be under the control of the state of Illinois. And you know, it just... number one, it's never going to happen because the appellate courts are not going to let it happen because they've been, HSA has been to court numerous times and has been upheld as a, you know, a properly functioning entity. But, you know, the state of Illinois can't solve the challenges that the IHSA faces.
Could you imagine game officials trying to get paid from the state of Illinois?
Oh, my God.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. As hard as it is to recruit officials now.
Yeah.
How hard would it be with that?
Impossible.
Oh.
Impossible.
Oh, my goodness. So, and then you'd have state reps going, well, we don't want this guy coming to our super sectional. You know, I mean, the whole thing is just, it'd just be a nightmare.
Yeah. So Nashville and Chicago Orr for the 2A championship tonight. The third place game, about 5:30 for 2A, has Gibson City, Melvin Sibley against Chicago Coolers. And they said on the broadcast last night, you know, we know that GCMS has won the last two 2A football titles, going 28. You know, they had a 31-game winning streak coming into the game last night. The only two games they lost was like 4 days after they won the football championship, where a lot of the kids weren't even there. But they got one youngster who got 16 D2 offers going to play D2 basketball. They got another kid who's going to be a preferred walk-on at Illinois for football. Another kid who's going to be the place kicker at Oklahoma State. And then one kid who's going to West Point. No wonder they've had some success.
Yeah, they've had... They got some athletes.
They got some athletes. Yes, that is impressive.
Yeah, and that and you know that's and of course Gibson City, Melvin Sibley is a consolidated school district, but you go all the way back to the original Class 1A and 2A division 1972. Gibson City was the team that Lincoln would beat in the original Class A state tournament in the quarterfinals, 68-66 on that Friday evening. So
there you go.
And had Gibson City Gunner Dennis Graff on that team, who I interviewed at halftime of one of the state tournament broadcasts one time. So it was kind of a flashback. We now hear Gibson City.
Should be two great title games today. Chicago Providence St. Mel, Cisna Park, 1-5 for the 1A title, a little after 1 o'clock, and then 1-2. That has not happened very often in the state championship game where you get the two top-ranked teams in the state. That's what we have tonight, Nashville and Chicago, or a battle of styles. And if Nashville can implement their style and get that game slowed down, they will have a chance. But if Orr can get up and down the floor,
in the first 3 or 4 minutes of the game will tell us exactly how it's going to turn out.
And usually, you know, you think about, like, Virginia in the college game. Mm-hmm. Usually the team that wants to play slow, it's a lot easier to slow a team down than to speed a team up that wants to play slow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Orr might get up. There might be a couple of stretches where Orr gets it sped up a little bit, but Nashville will be able to get it slowed back down.
Yes, they will. Nashville, very deliberate team.
Yes.
Very deliberate.
I'm looking forward to that game.
Yeah, that's going to be a heck of a
just
ball
a fantastic
game.
Matchup.
Yeah.
We need to get to a break here on Sports Saturday. When we come back, we will talk about the mess that was the sectional final between North Lawndale and Chicago Farragut. Ended in a double forfeit. Back in a moment.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize and Terry Tote.
David Jenkins, thank you very much. Back here on Sports Saturday, and there was an incident up in Chicago last night at the North Lawndale sectional final between North Lawndale and Farragut as the game was ruled a double forfeit after a fight broke out in the fourth quarter that involved players and fans. Now, Farragut was leading 54-50 with about 40 seconds left. Farragut got a run out for a dunk. The player was fouled on the dunk. Wasn't a dirty foul on the dunk, but as he was fouled, he swung back on the rim with his momentum just to protect himself. And when he came down, we saw the video, Terry.
Yeah.
He landed on the shoulder of a North Lawndale player. Now, it appeared that the North Lawndale player was just kind of standing in the lane. And then when the player for Farragut swung back off the rim, his momentum took him right on top of the North Lawndale player. So he landed basically on the shoulder of the North Lawndale player and hit the floor hard. And he got up mad and... it was like a powder keg. About two seconds later, punches being thrown, benches emptied, stands came apart as fans were pouring onto the floor. And so as a result of the brawl And the punch is, the gym was cleared. This is the statement from IHSA Executive Director Craig Anderson, quoting here. The game was postponed while the gym was cleared of all spectators, and the teams were sent to their respective locker rooms. After speaking to game management and the game officials, the IHSA ruled that the contest was going to be a double forfeit, and it was never concluded, ending quote. There. Now, Anderson went on to say, these are never easy decisions to make, but we believe it is the correct one. It is vital that we continue to send the message that incidents like this at high school contests will not be tolerated. They are unacceptable in society, no less at a high school sporting event. And that is what IHSA Executive Director Craig Anderson had to say about the situation last night. So as a result, DePaul College Prep automatically advances to the 3A state semifinals next weekend in Peoria.
So they get to skip the Super.
They get to skip the Super because they would have played the winner of that sectional in the Super. So DePaul College Prep automatically into the state tournament next weekend. Now, this has happened to North Lawndale before. Back in 2015, they were involved in a fight in the sectional against Marshall. They wound up being suspended 3 games for that incident. And in that year, St. Joseph was ruled the sectional champion without playing, and they went on to win the 3A title. So North Lawndale has a history of this type of shenanigans, I guess. But Terry, as we watched the video, when I heard about it, I heard that he was undercut on a dunk, and I was expecting to see a vicious, dirty play on the dunk. That's not how I saw it. It looked to me to be a good, hard foul on a dunk.
Yeah.
The kid for Farragut came back, landed on a North Lawndale player who didn't step down to try to injure him. It just kind of happened. And then after that, that's when everybody lost their tempers, lost their cool, and it escalated quickly.
Let's put things in perspective, and we've said it here many times. A gymnasium, a football field, a baseball field, just another classroom.
Yeah.
It is another classroom, and this sort of thing cannot be tolerated. Why did they get the double forfeit? Well, everybody off the benches apparently cleared the benches, got involved in a fight, which means everybody is suspended for 1 game. There were no players left to play in the next game from either team. I slowed the video down, counted the number of players. It was a short video clip. But I'm supposing that before, you know, if the clip had continued, I would have seen the final 2 or 3 players from each team get involved in the melee. So the IHSA, you know, first and foremost, there's no such thing as a protest in high school sports. And under the Federation rules, National Federation, and under the IHSA rules, In the rule book, under the officials section, says, anything not covered in the rule book, you can handle. And this is exactly what they did. They handled it last night. You can't have fights going on like this. You just cannot allow it. If it was just 2 players involved, you kick the 2 players out, they get suspended for a game, you move on, you continue the game. But this was a bench clearing ball brawl. I can remember back at, when I was at Lakeland College, we had bench-clearing brawl. We had a 22-minute delay with Lakeland playing Parkland when they were both nationally ranked. And I can, you know, personally from that years ago, I remember how just out of control things were. And,
well, those situations get out of control quickly.
Yes.
And they can escalate.
And people get hurt.
Yes.
And, you know, how do you handle it? I think the IHSA, you know, there's not a great solution because it wasn't a great event, a great action that took place. But the IHSA had to make a ruling, and the tournament has to continue on. So,
and for just from what I saw from the video, you know, people say, well, Farragut was winning with 40 seconds left. But as I watched that video, you could make the case that Farragut was the instigator.
Yeah.
Because it did not appear to be a dirty play on North Lawndale's part. If the kid for Farragut, who got fouled and came down the North Lawndale player, if the kids from Farragut would have not reacted the way they did, the situation wouldn't have escalated like it did. And once the kid hit the ground, and about 2 seconds later, Farragut's throwing punches. And now at that point, if you're North Lawndale, you're protecting yourself.
Well, sure.
And then that's when the situation really gets out of control. And so everybody's at fault. There's no right, no wrong, certainly no winners
right.
out of this situation
Correct.
At all. But as I saw the incident just through my, you know, mm-hmm. just neutral observing eyes, it looked like Farragut instigated it and escalated it to the point that it got to benches clearing, fans clearing, double forfeit. Now, with that said, North Lawndale's reputation works against them here, having sure. been involved in an incident like this before.
And what we saw was a piece of video that was shot from the stands several feet away. It was not courtside.
What went on in the game earlier?
What was being said? And you know, that was the thing. You know, what was being chirped during the whole game? Because
if you've never been to a public league game, there's chirping.
Yeah. Ask Hillsborough girls.
Yeah, they'll tell you.
Yeah, against Chicago Marshall.
Yeah. That's just how it's done up there.
That's right. This is nature of the beast, so to speak. So, you know, I just say, and I've already read tweets this morning and comments that, oh, my gosh, they didn't go and check the tape. You shouldn't have. Hey, don't have to. When you become a member of the IHSA, you agree to abide by their rulings and their rules.
The quote from Craig Anderson, the executive director of mm-hmm. the IHSA, after speaking to game management yeah. and the game officials, the IHSA ruled the contest a double forfeit.
Yeah.
That's all you rely on the people you've put in place yeah. on the ground. Like, remember, the game was at North Lawndale.
Yeah.
The game was at North Lawndale. So game management
was North Lawndale. That's right.
So when the game management and the game officials, you have, you know, if you're not going to listen to them,
yeah.
then what's even the point?
Yeah.
So there was no option here.
I don't think there was.
There was no way for the IHSA to win. If they would have ruled Farragut the winner,
mm-hmm.
they would be able to have people jumping down their throats for all the other reasons. Oh, you can't reward them for that type of activity. They ruled a double forfeit. Oh, it's unfair. There was, no matter what they decided to do, there was going to be people that were unhappy. But based on what you've always said, Terry, about it being another classroom.
Right.
And Craig Anderson had that in his comment, too, about you cannot tolerate these types of things
right.
at high school sporting events. The only thing realistically to do is to rule a double forfeit.
Parents sometimes have to be parents. And game officials and administrators have to be game officials and administrators. And they were.
Yep, they did their job.
So.
And to me, I just wonder if the next conversation in the IHSA is North Lawndale worthy of membership to the IHSA?
Well, that, you know, there's a lot that goes in behind that.
4 years, two fights in sectional games that resulted in forfeits. Two and 4 years.
Yeah, yeah. That's.
That's not normal.
It's almost a pattern.
You know, people like to bash the Chicago Public League and, oh, this is what you get. The Chicago Public League has existed for a long time. And there was a long period of time where the games were played with no fans because, you know, gang concerns, incidents like this. But I don't remember in postseason play the Chicago Public League getting in fights and having this happen. But it's happened two times in 4 years with Chicago and North Lawndale.
You know, humans do strange things sometimes, and the IHSA basically reacted the only way it could.
Nothing else to do.
It was a tough decision. It was basically a compromise, because you have to take into account, okay, he said, she said, or he said, you know, they said. What are you going to do? You know, what events earlier in the game led up to that particular point? You can't go back and change history, so you just double forfeit, and then you let the tournament continue, because it's about making sure the tournament continues.
And when I first heard about it, the way that I read it and the way that it was described was that the kid was undercut on a dunk. That's not what happened.
The typical undercut that you think about.
He was fouled
yes.
on the dunk, which if you're going to go up and dunk the ball, the kid's going to go up and try to challenge. It's a four-point game with under a minute to go. You can't give up the 2 points. But the kid fouling the dunker did not just run into his legs and flip him over.
No.
He fouled him. The kid hung on the rim, which he's allowed to do to protect himself,
swung
back, and landed on a North Lawndale player. That's what happened.
Yeah.
Now, what happened after that, you can debate why it happened. Should it have happened?
And to be honest with you, Tim, when game officials were the IHSA officials were talking with the game management people, they may not have seen that piece of tape.
Well, they probably didn't.
They probably didn't. So they were just going on basically what their memories were allowing them to remember, and bringing up the point that, you know, we've had the benches clear, fights break out.
Punches thrown.
And punches thrown.
Quickly,
and,
by the
and,
way.
And, you know, based on the fact that I would suspect, and I don't know officially, but I would suspect that virtually every player on both teams would have been suspended for a game. That meant no matter who won the game, they would not be eligible to play in the next game. So you double forfeit and you move on.
And remember, earlier this year, Thanksgiving tournament at Alton, we had a situation basically identical to this, to where Alton was playing Riverview Gardens out of Missouri. And there was a fight that involved players, involved fans. The game was ruled a double forfeit. Mm-hmm. Both teams were kicked out of the – they actually canceled the rest of the Thanksgiving tournament. And then because that was early in the year, then the schools dealt out appropriate suspensions and the season went on. This is a postseason game.
Yeah.
This is it. This is the end of the line. So there is no other – and these teams and players will be dealt suspensions beginning next year for those who weren't seniors. But when it's in a one-and-done single elimination postseason tournament, this is the only way to go.
Yeah. It's a tough call, but that's why they get the big bucks.
That's why they get the big bucks.
Yeah.
And it's just another reason why the IHSA is a top-notch organization. You know, people, we're going to get into this a little bit later, too.
Yes.
People bashing about the travel, the Belleville-West Danville game, that Belleville's closer to Louisville than East Moline, and Danville's closer to Indianapolis than East Moline. What's your point?
Yeah.
When you're in a statewide tournament, you're going to have to travel.
That's right.
That's just the reality of the situation. It's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
But for the IHSA, they do 99% of things as good as they can possibly be done. And like anything else in our society, people want to cherry pick the 1% of things that go bad. So they'll point to the double forfeit as a terrible thing. They'll point to the travel as a terrible thing. I defy you to do better.
Well, I and Tim, you and I have both, with our cable systems, have seen tournaments from other states.
Not as good.
They're not anywhere near as good.
No.
They're not. It's not the spectacular event that is put on by the IHSA. It just doesn't happen. And so.
Imagine if they don't rule out a double forfeit.
Yeah,
imagine they allow, just forget about the players being suspended and all the actual logistics and realities. Say they don't rule it a double forfeit. Say they allow Farragut to go on. Farragut wins the super sectional. Now you've got Chicago Farragut at the state tournament. And what's going to be the number one story at the state tournament?
Right.
Then the whole state tournament's marred.
Right. Right. Yes. So you have to take action and you have to take it quickly.
Yes.
And that's what was done.
And just like that whole thing happened quickly. It's like the line from Top Gun about at the end whenever they're trying to scramble the jets. They'll be there. The thing will be fixed in 10 minutes. This thing will be over in 2 minutes.
Yes.
Like that thing was over.
Mm-hmm.
Started quick and, it escalated quickly. Yeah. And it took a while to get everything sorted out. But from the time that the foul occurred, to the time when the bench is emptied, snap your fingers, and it's on.
It's just like that.
Yeah. It's on.
And we are talking about an activity which is run through the schools, run through a high school association, which tries to continue to tie in the educational process. And that's why it's important that this sort of thing happen and this sort of decision has to be made. So
exactly right.
You won't get any complaint from me.
Nor I. We need to get to a break on Sports Saturday. We're back in a moment.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize and Terry Tote.
Thank you, David Jenkins. And Terry, we're talking at the very end about how, the IHSA, they do so many things. Mm-hmm. Everybody focuses on football and basketball.
Right.
Those are the big deal. But they do so many other events. Scholastic Bowl.
Yeah.
Being one of the great educational things that the IHSA is involved in. And they are into sectional competition today in Class 1A at Carthenville in the Scholastic Bowl sectional. You have Carthenville and Southwestern both competing.
good luck to both of them. And of course, Litchfield won the Scholastic Bowl a few years ago. And, you know, we talk about athletics and athletic competition. But, hey, this is the heart and soul of education here. This is and we had the kids in, and they were terrific. They were absolutely terrific. They were not fazed at all by being on the radio so good luck to both Southwestern and Carlinville today. Let's hope that they get to state. They'll be at the Civic Center next weekend, I believe, are the state finals.
15th.
And, good luck, and let's hope that they bring home a state championship in the Scholastic Bowl.
That starts at 10 o'clock this morning in mm-hmm. Carlinville. Carlinville takes on Metro East Lutheran, Southwestern against New Berlin. Then at 10:50, Southwestern against Metro East, Carlinville will face New Berlin. Then at 11:40, Carlinville and Southwestern will play, and then Metro East Lutheran and New Berlin will go at 11:40 as well.
Good luck to them.
Absolutely.
This is the brain game right here, folks. This is education. This is like Jeopardy, only I think it's a lot more pressure because you don't have crowds cheering you on. You're there by yourself and, with your teammates, and you're trying to figure out these answers. It's not easy. There's a lot of pressure there.
That's right. So good luck to Carlinville and Southwestern competing in the Scholastic Bowl sectional today. We now want to switch gears a little bit and talk about Lincoln Wood and their decision to move in to the realm of girls basketball.
Yeah. The decision was made by the Panhandle School Board to start a basketball program both at the junior high and at the high school level next year and have a schedule set for next year. And you're saying, gee, that sounds odd, but Lincolnwood did have a program at one time, a high school program, which ran from 1980-81 through 1984-85. So the early 80s, they did have a high school program. In fact, the final year that they had the program, they actually hosted the regional tournament, and it was top-ranked Litchfield, top-ranked team in the state, Litchfield, playing Nokomis in the regional championship. And it was Nokomis and Maury Huff slowed down the game, played stall ball for the regional championship. I can remember that game, broadcasting that game from Lincolnwood. They had, girls basketball for about 5 years there then went away from the program, got involved in the co-op program in the late 90s. Sarah Hitchings was the first young lady to go to Nokomis as part of the co-op program with Lincolnwood. And, of course, Venetia Waterman followed, Ann Murphy followed, many, many girls followed. And Lincolnwood, since that time, had been part of a co-op program with Nokomis, with Litchfield, Pawnee, which I don't believe any girls went to Pawnee this year. But there was some interest, apparently, of Panhandle students, girls, who wanted to play for Lincolnwood. So from the information we've gathered, about 20 girls at the junior high level, about 20 girls at the high school level, and so they've pulled the trigger, and they're going to put together a schedule next year and try to get the program going, get it up and going. So.
And earlier, WSMI's David Jenkins had a chance to talk with Lincolnwood Athletic Director Josh Stone, and here's that conversation.
During their meeting last month, the Panhandle Board of Education approved the creation of a girls basketball program at both the junior and senior high school levels. Joining me on the phone right now to talk a little bit about that program is Lincolnwood High School Athletic Director Josh Stone. Josh, thank you for joining me today. And first off, what started the talk of creating this program at Lincolnwood High School?
Well, we were in a co-op with girls basketball with another school, and we had a lot of students who couldn't make the journey to the other school for transportation issues, and the co-op was kind of coming up for rediscussion with the other school, and some girls kept saying, I would play if it was here, and I kind of thought, one or two, okay, that's awesome, let's see if we can't get you involved in the co-op, and then more and more kind of started as a spark that turned into a huge fire where we ended up with 20 kids at both the high school and junior high level that said they'd play basketball, so we just kind of went with that and contacted them, went to the board and asked them if we could start this, and everyone in the district been very supportive of trying to get this started.
What's the timeline for this? When do you see this potentially starting up?
Next season.
Next season, as soon as next season.
Yes, that is my goal. I'm developing a schedule as we speak. I'm just going to start with the MSM, junior high and high school teams, get that conference schedule developed, and then I'll move out to, you know, non-conference opponent. But we plan on having a full junior high and high school schedule next year.
Is there any kind of, like, deadline that the IHSA and IESA has where you have to have this in by a certain time?
There are. They're typically over the summer when they ask you to have these in, but there are deadlines close to the beginning of the season to get something started. But we'll meet those. I don't see them being any problems, but in my opinion and my thoughts, we'll have everything ready before school ends.
So, and this is for sure happening. Obviously, the board approved it and everything, but this is actually happening right now.
This is actually happening. The only thing that would stop it is the girls not showing up for practice day one.
When would that be, I guess? Would you need to know by summer, or when would that be?
We're hoping to have some high school summer stuff over, you know, some camps, some open gyms for the high school girls and hopefully junior high girls, keeping them interested over the summer, keeping them updated on what's going on, how it's going to work, and trying to get some conditioning in and just keep their interest level up throughout the summer until the school year starts for the 2019-2020 season.
Sure. And would you be part of the MSM conference or an independent? What would you be affiliated next year?
We would be affiliated with both the junior high and the high school MSM conference. If for some reason I can't get all the MSM teams on my schedule, we probably won't compete in the MSM conference until that happens. But from the other ADs inside the conference, they've all sounded pretty confident they can get me on their schedule.
Sounds good. So, but there's a slight chance you could be independent next year and then work your way into MSM in the future?
Right. Some of the other ADs may have full schedules and contracts with other schools that they may have to drop. They want to fulfill that contract till it ends, so they may have to wait for an open date to happen. But I don't see that happening, but I'm not going to guarantee anything yet. But we're hopeful we're competing for the MSM next year.
Awesome. That's awesome. So you said about 20 kids. Is that high school and junior high combined, or is that...
Oh, surprisingly, that's 20 in each. I think a couple girls at the high school level kind of heard about it, thought, hey, I would do this. And then just kind of, like I said, just kind of a little spark and some interest got going and started a fire, and here we are, and we're getting ready to start a high school basketball season for girls.
Absolutely. That's awesome. Congratulations for this happening, and good luck with all this, because that is fantastic.
Congratulate me when the season starts, and we're 100% in.
Right.
Excited to have it. We've always had a strong high school boys basketball presence in the area, and we're hoping to continue a girls basketball program at Lincolnwood.
Josh Stone, thank you for a few minutes of your time. I really appreciate it.
Hey, not a problem. If you need anything else, just let me know.
All right, that was Josh Stone talking with our own David Jenkins, and I mean, we'll see what happens. It's a big undertaking. Anytime you're getting something started from scratch, there is a lot of logistics that go into it. You heard Josh talking about maybe not being able to get a full MSM schedule this year, just because this is late in the game, because so many schedules are already set. Now, with the change in the scheduling last year, it does help them to where you can play that extra game, so that could be beneficial for Lincolnwood moving forward. I remember when I saw Josh Stone a few weeks ago, we had a meeting for the upcoming Tito Shootout versus Cancer, and I said, was there any talk of doing this when Abby Brockmeyer was in third or fourth grade? No.
No.
No. And you mentioned, I mean, it's a who's who of girls basketball talent that could have played for Lincolnwood had they had a team all these years.
True. you've had a lot of terrific individuals, but there was just never a big enough group to get a team at Lincolnwood and sustain a team at Lincolnwood. You know, and that's really the challenge they've got ahead of them here, Tim, as we both know, that, you know, you may have a group of girls and there's going to be some attrition. There always is. But you have to be able to keep enough kids interested to keep the program alive. And, you know, along with the other logistical things of scheduling, you need officials, you need gym time for practice, you need, you know, you've got to have people to take tickets and sell popcorn. And, I mean, a lot of stuff that a lot of people don't think about.
And that stuff can be dealt with.
Yeah.
A concern for me, and not that this would be any type of deal breaker at all, but Lincolnwood has turned into a volleyball school.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they are really, really phenomenal at volleyball. And we got the 7th grade team playing in the state semifinals today. The 8th grade team's playing in the sectional next week. The high school team's consistently putting up solid season after solid season. So that would be a potential concern for me from that perspective alone, is how many kids are going to be committed And you can do both. I'm not saying that both can't be done. Well, in a small school, a lot of times it is the same group of athletes.
And you've got softball in the spring, you know, and when you start having camps and you start having workouts, you know, that chews up a lot of time. And if you're not used to being involved in multiple sports, and then all of a sudden you have these camps, that sometimes leads to burnout. And so there are some challenges there. I wish them the best.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, we hope it succeeds beyond our wildest dreams. But, you know, there's going to need to be some perseverance in the early years to sell the program and to keep reselling the program to the kids that come through, you know, through the grade school level and continue to build the program. So then, you know, plus got to have coach. Got to have some coaches and, you know, some camps and stuff like that. So
yeah. Wish them the best of luck.
Yeah, good luck.
We mentioned the 7th grade.
Yes.
Lincolnwood Knights, they will play in the state semifinals.
They're in the semifinals, and they come up at 11 o'clock this morning to play Lewiston. Knights are 24-5, Lewiston 18-1. They win. They play for the state championship this afternoon at 3:15. And either way, when they get home this afternoon, they're going to have some punch and cookies at the high school. And we wish them the best of luck. Staunton, unfortunately, lost in the quarterfinals in 3A yesterday. Pleasant Plains defeated them 2-0, as Plains remain undefeated in Class 3A. Mm. So, yeah. Pleasant Plains.
Good in everything.
They seem to be pretty darn good in everything. Kind of like a tea town almost. Yeah,
right.
Only in the Springfield area, you know. So,
yeah, very consistent.
Oh, yeah. Very, very consistent.
Junior high, good high school, boys, girls, don't matter.
Yeah. Good luck to the Knights in their battle against Lewiston today. So.
We need a break on Sports Saturday. We're back in just a moment.
Back to Sports Saturday here on WSMI, and we rejoin Tim Mize and Terry Tote.
David Jenkins, thank you so much. We have a few minutes left in the program. And, Terry, I wanted to talk about attendance.
Okay.
I saw something last night on the Twitter, and I don't really like Twitter. You know, I mean, it has useful points.
Sure.
At times.
But then people whine and complain.
There was a discussion going on, and the point was all these 3A and 4A sectionals that were sold out, making a big deal about the 3A sectionals and the 4A sectionals being sold out, and trying to equate that to somehow Peoria is not a good venue for the state tournament because the crowds are low, and somehow if the state tournament was up north, you would have massive crowds. It's a false premise. False premise.
Yeah.
Because the sectional tournaments for all the classes are sold out. Like, you know, the Southeast Lincoln game was sold out.
Yeah.
Probably about, I think, a little under 1,300 people had turned people away. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's a high-level, big school boys basketball game. The Hillsboro sectional for girls had 1,500, maybe 1,600 people at all three games.
Yes.
So sectional size crowd has nothing to do with it. The Altamont sectional between Nokomis and Central A&M, packed house.
Yes.
Sectionals are always sold out.
Yes.
Sectional crowds are not the issue. It's like in the Big Lebowski. You know, it's not the issue.
Yeah.
It's not the issue, dude. The issue is that when you get to the state tournament, and we saw it this year at the girls' tournament with Chicago Marshall. The Chicago schools do not bring a crowd. Now, you say, well, if it was in Chicago, they'd bring more people. Yeah, they would bring more people, but not enough to sell out a venue.
Sure.
You know, when you look at the small towns, they bring the crowds.
Yes.
You know, like last night, Nashville had the people there. Gibson City had the people there. In the 1A, Triopia had the people there. Central A&M, you know, Assumption and Marquette had the people there. The issue is when you have big cities, the crowds are not going to be there. That's just the reality of the situation. And then I saw last night the 4A sectional at East Moline United between Belleville West and Danville. The gym was basically empty.
Yeah.
Basically empty. You're talking about Belleville West, the defending 4A champs. They've got the best player in the state in E.J. Liddell. It was 2-4 in state rankings. Both teams were 3 to 3.5 hours away from the game site. My question would be, where were all the people from East Moline to show up and watch that great basketball game? It's a 4A game. Where are they at?
Yeah. Well, and then the travel thing comes into it. When a state is shaped like Illinois, there's always going to be travel. There has always been travel. Going back 112 years ago, when the state basketball tournament began, and it was an invitational tournament at that time, they invited teams from all around the state. There's always been travel involved. There's always going to be travel involved. And you just can't get away from the physical nature of the geography of the state.
And you run into it in the 4A basketball tournament,
yes,
primarily, and the 8A football tournament, where, mm-hmm, you know, you get south of Springfield, you're looking at, for basketball, Belleville West, Belleville East, Edwardsville, Alton, Collinsville. That's about
it
in terms of 4A schools. So when you start advancing, you're going to have to travel.
Yes.
And the IHSA does a great job of allowing the Metro East schools, when they're playing each other in a sectional, to play the game locally.
Sure. Sure.
You know, there's been a lot of games between Edwardsville and whoever played at Collinsville.
Now,
this
granted,
year, Belleville, West, and Alton played at Edwardsville.
Granted, with the subsectional setups like we see in baseball and basketball and volleyball, there have been teams that have driven through three towns that have had regionals to get to a regional tournament. It happens. Is it the best case scenario? Probably not. But when you're trying to make sure that the better teams reach the sectional level to ensure that you have a better state tournament, that's one of the things you give up.
Steve Kimbrough told me this year they were over at the Neoga Regional. It's like we passed Windsor-Stoustrasse on the road tonight. They were going to Edinburgh.
Yes.
McComas was going to Neoga. It's just there's always going to be side effects.
There's going to be a hitch in the get-along somewhere.
Is. There's no way
somewhere.
For a perfect system.
Yeah.
But the crowd size thing, it just really annoyed me.
Yeah.
You know, because, yeah, sectionals are sold out. That's the way it works. That's always been the case. That will always be the case.
That's,
boys or girls.
Yeah.
Small school or big school.
It's rural America versus city.
Yeah.
And rural America, we take our teams more to heart because, you know, there aren't as many things to do in the smaller communities, and we pay more attention. And you know, I think businesses like ours and, you know, our friend, you know, Kyle Herschelman and Dave Kane, and, you know, we have the opportunity to indulge ourselves in enjoying these sporting events.
It was laughable up at Redbird Arena when Hillsborough played Chicago Marshall.
Oh, yeah.
The Toppers had four full sections of Redbird filled, and Chicago Marshall had
50 people.
Then that's not really an exaggeration.
They sold 50 tickets.
Yeah, that's about what it was. Now, Hillsborough showed up.
Yeah.
T-Town showed up. St. Joe Ogden showed up. Who didn't show up? The Chicago school.
Yeah.
And it's not to say anything bad about the Chicago school. You know, Chicago has millions
program.
And millions of people.
Yeah.
They've got great basketball. But if you don't go to Marshall, you don't care about Marshall. If you don't go to Simeon, you don't care about Simeon.
And that's why I don't think moving a state basketball tournament to the Chicagoland area, even if it's just 3A and 4A, would be a good idea.
You get a few more people.
You might get a few more people, but I don't think you're going to get the crowds that you would from downstate. I just, it's better to keep things kind of centralized. That's what makes it a state tournament. You know, it's not an invitational tournament. It's a state tournament. If you're involved in the state organization, you know, the venue should be somewhere in the middle section of the state.
And, you know, we do see it in baseball where the 3A and 4A tournament is at a different venue.
Right.
But it's not basketball.
No.
It's just different.
Yes, yes.
You know, they don't play the 5A through 8A football playoffs at a different venue.
No, they don't.
It's all at the same place.
And, you know, a lot of these venues are coming up for renewal for the various sports. And now you've got, you know, talk of the state of Illinois wanting to get back into trying to take control of the IHSA, and which is a really stupid idea because the state of Illinois has enough stuff to put up with and fix before they ever need to worry about messing with the IHSA. Yeah, they do.
Oh, you know, like, you talk like it's the poorest run state in the country or something.
Oh, geez, you know.
Oh, wait.
Let's see. Schools don't get enough money. Bridges
right.
and roads.
Uh-huh. Right.
Okay, anyway.
Well, you need bridges and roads to get to the game.
Yeah. It helps.
Huh.
It helps.
Useful.
You know. Yeah, useful. Very good. And, you know, school funding, that's always a kind of an important thing.
It helps.
Just, it helps a little bit. So.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Anyway.
1,600 people at Hillsborough.
Yeah.
For the girls' sectional.
Yeah. Three nights. Over
4,500. No, two nights.
Two nights, three games.
Nights.
Yeah, three. Yeah.
Complete sellouts for all three games.
What else can you ask for?
No,
that's
more
great.
Than that.
It's a great venue.
No more than that. Hey, should be a great state tournament today, the 2A game, Nashville and Chicago, or 1 versus 2. That's about 7:30 tonight. The 1A title game this afternoon, Chicago, Providence, St. Mel, and Cisna Park.
Good luck to the Knights at the state volleyball tournament.
Tito, take us home.
That's going to do it for Sports Saturday. Have a great sporting weekend. You're listening to WSMI-FM, Litchfield Hills, Borough Carlinville, and Greenville.